she said, turning to the brother as Iltis slammed a door on the fury outside. Is it? Highness, I... The young brother shook his head, bafflement and shock dominating his features. Some are known to have the power to turn the wind, but this... He blanched at her obvious consternation, stammering as he forced himself to continue. There was something as the ships neared the shore. What something? It was faint, but I felt it. A burning, you might say. It's commonly felt when another gifted dies, as if all their power has blossomed at once. She moved away from him, sitting on her bunk, lost in the enormity of her blunder. I killed Arklev too soon, though I doubt he knew his true role. She gave herself over to contemplation as the ship pitched and groaned around her, there being little else to do. The thief's snare leads to victory in no more than 10 additional moves, provided the player exploits the opportunity with a swift attack on the opposing emperor. Lerna? She looked up, finding Devoka standing over her, features softened in concern. Beyond her, Mural stood back from the portal, now open to reveal a sunlit sky. From the height of the sun, she judged she had been sitting in silent meditation for some hours. I need to speak to the captain. The day-to-day command of the Queen Lerna had been given over to a Nilsalin named Devish Larton, a lanky veteran of the trade routes to the northern reaches who had also commanded a warship in her father's fleet during the Alperan War. She found him at the mainmast, overseeing repairs to a patch of deck shattered by a falling block. Fortunately, it seemed to be the only major damage they had suffered. "Highness," he greeted her, glancing up as she strode towards him, clearly preoccupied with his task. "Captain, turn this ship south and make ready for battle." She cast her gaze at the surrounding ocean, finding only four other ships within view and the shoreline no longer in sight. Scattered and ripe for harvest, she thought, suppressing a wave of self-reproach. Indulge your guilt later. And signal those ships to close with us. All in good time, Highness. We have much to— Do it now! She snapped. The Valerian fleet is currently north of us, and I have little doubt we'll see them within the hour. Larton's gaze flicked momentarily to Iltis, who had taken a purposeful step forward. At once, Highness, he said, before moving away and voicing a torrent of orders. "Find Lady Alornis," Lerna told Mural. "She is to ensure her engines are in working order. Lord Benton, please tell Lord Marshal Norta to ready his regiment for battle." Captain Larton advised that they tack to the west for a time, bargaining they would find more realm vessels farther from the coast. By mid-afternoon, they had gathered another 40 ships, a few missing mast and rigging, but all able to make headway. Predictably, the Meldinian ships displayed the least damage, and she was heartened to find the Red Falcon among them. Shiplord Elnurin waving from her bow as she came alongside. Only she and the Queen Lerna had so far been equipped with Alornis's fire-spewing engine, upon which she now rested a great deal of expectation. "We could head back to shore, Highness," the captain suggested as Lerna stood at the rail, her eyes fixed on the northern horizon. "Pick up a few more strays on the way." She surveyed her fleet, finding two of the great troop ships present, as well as a good number of Meldinians. "No," she said. "Drop anchor and pile one of the boats with all the rags and wood you can spare. Douse it with pitch to make sure it smokes, and set it ablaze. Signal the other ships to do the same." This time he knew better than to linger, and the boat was swiftly set adrift, casting a tall, twisting pillar of black smoke into the sky, soon joined by dozens more, as the other ships followed suit. "Quite the beacon, Highness," Larton complimented her with a bow. "Thank you." She returned her gaze to the north, though it's like to draw as many enemies as friends. The Valerians appeared as the sun began to fade. At least 100 masts cresting the northern horizon, with more appearing by the second. Lerna's beacon had gathered over 30 more strays as they waited at anchor, but she knew any further delay would prove fatal. "Raise all sails, Captain," she told Larton, "and signal the Red Falcon to remain at our starboard side. The other ships are to follow us." Larton gave a somber nod, eyeing the Valerian fleet with well-justified but controlled trepidation. The course, Highness? She gave a laugh as she moved away, making for the bow. Towards the enemy, good sir, with all possible haste. She found Alornis busily checking her engine, her hands moving with a speed and deftness that seemed almost unnatural. Any damage, my lady? Had to drain water from the pipes, and the fittings require a slight realignment. Alornis hefted a mallet and began hammering at a copper tube on the engine's underside. But she'll work, Highness. Good. Take yourself below. Lords Iltis and Benton will see to the engine. Alornis didn't even glance up, continuing to hammer away as the Valerians drew ever nearer. Lerna sighed and turned to Mural. There's another male shirt in my cabin. Please fetch it for Lady Alornis. She drew Dvoko aside, speaking softly in Lonak. No harm is to come to her, sister. Promise me. My place is by you. Not today. She gripped the Lonak woman's arm. She is your sister today. Promise me. You fear her brother's wrath so? Lerna lowered her gaze. You know it's not his wrath I fear. Dvoka gave a reluctant nod, taking the male shirt from Mural and striding towards Alornis. Put this on, little one. Lerna joined Lord Norta, arranging a fighting party on the deck, 50 of his best fighters, equipped with broad wooden panels for shielding against arrows. My lord, I should like to address your troops. He bowed and issued a curt order, the company snapping to attention with a uniform stamp of boots. She scanned their faces, gratified by their lack of fear and the devotion that continued to colour every gaze. I said once, I wouldn't lie to you, she told them, and I won't. We face a hard fight because I have made a grievous error. But I also tell you no lie when I say that this battle can be won if you will stand with me. The instant shout of acclaim was enough to convince her further words were unnecessary. Spare no enemy, she told Norta. Every Valerian that sets foot on this deck must be killed before he can take another step. Unlike his soldiers, Lord Norta's agreement was softly spoken, his expression the same cautious frown he always wore in her presence. I'll see to it, Highness. She returned to the bow, taking a position on the raised platform just behind Alornis and the engine. Benton and Iltis were close on both sides of her, whilst Mural stood behind, dagger in hand. Dvoka crouched at the side of the engine, spear held low in readiness. I should fetch some shielding, Highness, Iltis said. Their arrows were many at the teeth, if you recall. I recall very well, my lord, but that won't be necessary. Lerna watched the Valerian ships come ever closer, the leading vessel closing to a range of about 500 yards. She glanced towards starboard, taking satisfaction from the sight of the Red Falcon alongside, a man standing ready at their own engine. She could only hope he had been properly taught how to use it. A glance towards the stern confirmed the other ships in their small fleet were following in an orderly narrow line, every deck crowded with soldiers and pirates. The portside ballista began to clatter as the Valerian ships closed, casting its bolts at the rigging of a small but swift warship, tacking into their path. At first, the arcing fountain of projectiles seemed to have no effect, but they were soon rewarded by the sight of a figure tumbling from the warship's mast to land heavily on the deck, raising an instant cheer from the ballista crew. Soon, however, the Valerian archers were able to bring their own weapons into play, a shower of arrows thumping into the Queen Lerna from end to end. Lerna watched her shaft smack into the planking, an arm's length away, but managed to control an instinctive flinch. Fear is a luxury today. They need to see a queen. The port ballista continued to clatter, the crewman winding the mechanism, whooping with excitement at the effect on the Valerian vessel, his first bolt striking with sufficient force to pin a man to the deck. A dozen or more close-packed free swords fell as the archers in the Queen Lerna's rigging soon joined in, wreaking havoc on the warship as it veered away, littered with corpses. A whooshing roar dragged Lerna's attention back to the bow, where she was greeted with the sight of Alornis raising the engine to its full elevation, a stream of fire arcing towards the oncoming Valerian ship. It was one of their troopships, only slightly smaller than the Queen Lerna, the archers in her rigging assailing them with a cloud of arrows as they closed at ramming speed. At first, Alornis's fire stream fell into the sea, raising enough steam to momentarily obscure the oncoming ship. However, when it cleared, they were rewarded with the sight of a blaze covering her bow from sea to rail. The Valerian ship seemed to shudder, her course altering abruptly, like a wounded boar shying from a spear point. Adornis turned a fierce glower on the two soldiers working the bellows. "Pump harder! I need more pressure!" She realigned the engine as the Valerian vessel wallowed in their path, unleashing another torrent of flame that licked along her side before ascending to sweep the deck, igniting men and rigging alike without distinction. Flaming bodies began to leap from the ship, a chorus of screams reaching them through the thickening smoke along with the stench of burning flesh. Alornis faltered then, her hand falling from the spigot, the flames dying, a pale stillness seizing her features. Lerna moved quickly to her side, placing a hand on her shoulder and turning her. "A burden not to be shirked, my lady," she said, taking her hand and placing it firmly back on the spigot. "To your duty, if you would." An arrow came arcing down to smack into the engine, its steel head shattering on the iron fittings as it spun away. Alornis barely seemed to notice, her pale face still frozen as she nodded and returned to her task, altering the angle of the engine to cast flame at the Valerian sails. Lerna could see men running around the ship, buckets in hand as they fought flames that wouldn't die. Soon her rigging was ablaze, and her crew began to abandon ship with a frenzied alacrity, men trailing flames as they tumbled into the sea by the dozen. Lerna cast about for another victim, spying a fast-moving warship some 200 paces off the port bow. "Tell the captain to make for that one," she said to Muriel before turning back to Alornis. "My lady, I believe your engine requires more fuel." By evening, they had burned their way through the center of the Valerian line, dividing their fleet in two and sowing chaos and panic in every sailor and freesword to witness the spectacle of a dozen warships blazing in the gathering dark. But the battle didn't end. Although their cohesion had been lost, the Valerians fought on, ships mounting lone, often suicidal attacks, soon left burning in their wake or stormed by the Maldinians. Only one came close enough to mount an assault on the Queen Lerna. Her helmsman displayed considerable skill by swinging her around just beyond the range of Alornis's device, then hauling the tiller to slam into the Queen Lerna's starboard side. Her complement of varietai heaving ladders into place and storming across despite appalling losses inflicted by the ballista and the archers above. Lord Norta's company met them head-on before they had seized more than a few feet of the deck, attacking with a disciplined ferocity that did great credit to their months of training. The Lord Marshal himself hacked his way through the Varietai's ranks, breaking their formation apart, fighting with an unconscious skill and precision Lerna hadn't seen since her days with Brother Solace. His warcat fought at his side, reaping death with every swipe of its claws. With the Varietai all hacked down, or forced over the side, Norta rallied his soldiers into a tight wedge and led them onto the Valerian ship, overcoming the remaining crew as they mounted a desperate stand around the mainmast. A few had evidently attempted to surrender, judging by the number of unarmed men Lerna saw cast into the sea. "Highness!" A sailor came running from the helm, pointing to port. "Captain Larton begs to report more ships to the west." Lerna peered into the gathering dusk, making out the faint lines of tall masts. The dark brings scant relief, it seems. She looked to the east, where the Red Falcon could be seen, fire spouting from her prow to engulf a Valerian troopship. Beyond her, more Maldinian vessels were assaulting the remaining enemy line, the sky alight with a continual cascade of flaming balls as the mangonels did their deadly work. "Tell the captain to turn west," she told the sailor, "and signal the realm vessels to follow us. Our allies have this matter in hand." Unfortunately, it was clear an unseen hand still exercised some form of command over the Valerian fleet, and felt no desire to allow her to confront the latest threat. A squadron of 10 vessels separated from the central cluster of ships to plough towards them at full sail. The wind was in their favour, and they managed to place themselves directly in the Queen Lerna's path, heaving about to face them, arrows and ballista bolts filling the air between them as they closed. Lerna clasped her hands together and stood still as the air buzzed about her, a bolt flicking through her hair just below the ear. Iltis moved his bulky frame in front of her, holding his arm in front of his face as if shielding himself from a rain shower, grunting as an arrow grazed his forearm. Lerna turned a questioning gaze to Alornis as she finished refueling the engine. "The last of the oil, Highness," she reported, her voice as devoid of expression as her face. "Don't spare it, my lady," Lerna advised. "A blazing ship makes a bigger impression than a scorched one." The first Valerian ship to come into range was of considerably smaller draft than the Queen Lerna, and Alornis was obliged to depress the spout of her engine as she swept by, liberally dousing her in flame from bow to stern, heralding the now familiar chorus of screams. Alornis managed another fulsome blast at the next ship, a considerably larger troop ship well supplied with ballistae and archers. The stream of fire managed to sweep many from the rigging, but not before they had killed a dozen or more realm guard and the crew manning the port ballista. Lerna turned to see the last dregs of fire dripping from the engine's spout, Alornis meeting her gaze and giving an apologetic bow. Lerna pointed her towards the now silent ballista. Despite the flames still licking at its ropes and sails, the Valerian troopship maintained its course, a full freesword battalion assembled on deck. Lerna was about to order Norta to bring up the rest of his regiment, but saw that the Lord Marshal had anticipated the need, the soldiers running to form ranks with remarkable precision despite the confusion all around. The port ballista clattered into life once more, Alornis aiming whilst Devoka worked the handle. Lerna followed the flight of one bolt as it streaked across the gap to claim the life of a Valerian freesword officer who had unwisely chosen to stand tall at the rail, no doubt as an example to his men. She hoped they learned the lesson well. "Highness!" It was Lartan, calling from the helm and pointing to something beyond the Valerian ship. Lerna blinked away the smoke-borne sting in her eyes and sought to discern something through the haze. "The King Malcius," she saw as the view cleared. "Fitting that my brother should come to save me." The King Malcius came on at full sail, her archers casting a shower of fire arrows at the Valerian troopship before she ploughed into her starboard hull with a splintering crunch. The fires now littering the sea painted the subsequent spectacle with flickering shadows, the sight of a host of steel-clad men rushing from the King Malcius to assail the freeswords seeming unreal somehow, like something from a dream or a nightmare. Lerna's gaze was soon drawn to the sight of a burly man throwing himself into the densest knot of Valerians, his mace rising and falling with deadly effect. At his side was a taller and more slender figure, wielding a longsword. She watched as together they hacked their way the length of the ship, their knights following in a thrashing mass of steel, driving the free swords back with such murderous zeal most chose the scarce safety of the sea rather than stay to fight on. By the time the Queen Lerna had drawn up alongside the troopship, the two figures were standing at her port rail, removing their helms to greet her with a bow. "Good evening, my lords," she called to Fief Lord Arundel and his grandfather. "Forgive me, Highness," Banders called back, his broad features slick with sweat, "but are we to land soon? One more week at sea, and my knights are like to hang me." Lerna turned to survey the scene, the sky now black, and the only illumination coming from the many blazing ships. The tumult of combat had faded, though she could still hear men screaming somewhere, voices calling for help in Valerian mixed with the odd gurgling sound that accompanied a sinking ship. "Indeed, my lord," she called to Banders, "a landing is overdue." The ship sat on the beach like some great wounded beast, her masts sheared away and much of her side stripped of timber, exposing the complex web of beams that somehow contrived to hold her together. It was Benton who recognized her as the Fief Lord Centers. His sea-trained eyes had a knack for discerning the slight differences that distinguished one ship from another. "Seems she's been driven too far up the beach to be taken off by the tide," he said. "It's a marvel she's still in one piece." The short voyage to the bay had yielded only 5 ships from the 30 that had sailed with Lady Reva, all severely damaged and barely afloat, though their precious cargo of troops and supplies were mostly intact. The Centers brought the total to 6, but she could hardly be described as seaworthy. In all, just over 2/3 of the Queen's fleet had survived the storm, though casualties had been heavy, and the battle with the Valerians had claimed at least another 1,000 lives. Although Lerna saw the flush of victory of many faces, she knew the battle had in fact been indecisive. Shiplord El Nurin, estimating they had captured or sunk no more than half the Valerian fleet. Whoever commanded them was wise enough to withdraw under cover of night, he surmised. One of our scout ships reported seeing sails on the southern horizon. She took the first boat to the shore, overriding all objections with a silent glare. The time for caution had died in the storm. For all the acclaim shouted at her from the surrounding ships, as the boat wended its way towards the beach, she knew their morale would still plummet like a stone when the reality of their situation became apparent. They need to see a queen. She was accompanied by Lord Marshal Norta, and a full company of Queen's Daggers. Off to the north, Brother Solis led another cluster of boats, filled with all that remained of the Sixth Order, whilst Count Marvin took his best Nilsailans to secure the southern approaches. They were obliged to row their way through several corpses en route. Lerna, surprised to find most were Valerian, bobbing in the swell with arrows protruding from their armour. The tide was low, and the beach free of breakers as they scraped to a halt, Lerna leaping free of the boat before Iltis could raise an objection. She heard him smother a curse as he splashed into the waist-deep water behind. She labored through the surf towards the hulk, eyes scanning the part-ruined hull and finding numerous faces staring down at her. Though there were no voices raised in order claim now, most just seemed pale with exhaustion. She noticed a dark cluster of more Valerian bodies on the beach, perhaps 200 men and horses liberally seeded with arrows. "Thought we were easy meat," a voice called down from the centres, Lerna's gaze finding a stocky man standing in one of the rents in the ship's hull, holding a longbow and looking down at her with a stern regard that contrasted with the usual cautious respect shown to her by Cumbrian soldiery. "Proved them wrong." Lerna stared up at him, holding his gaze until he added, "Highness," in a clipped voice. "Lord Antesh," she said. "Where's Lady Reva?" He sagged at her words, head lowered and eyes tight closed. "I take it, Highness, you have no news of her either." Lerna turned to watch the first wave of troops coming ashore, the Queen's Daggers spreading out to sweep the dunes, whilst the Realm Guard regiment grounded their boats, more following in a seemingly unending tide. "Lord Antesh," she turned back to him, finding a man now visibly shrinking in grief. "Lord Antesh!" He straightened at her shout, a spasm of anger flashing across his face before he forced himself to a neutral expression. "Highness, I hereby name you Lord Commander of the Queen's Cumbrian host. Please remove your soldiers from this ship and proceed inland. There will be a council of captains this evening, where I shall require a full accounting of your numbers." She moved on, without waiting for an acknowledgement. They followed the Blessed Lady, she knew. I can leave no doubt that they must now follow me. The woman must have been quite beautiful in life, possessed of a dancer's litheness and features of porcelain delicacy. But as Lerna had witnessed many times now, death always seemed to rob the body of beauty, bleaching the skin and leaving the features a slack echo of the soul that had once made those rosebud lips smile. Brother Solis had discovered more bodies in the dunes a short distance away, slaves judging by their clothing, each with their throat cut. The once beautiful woman, however, showed no sign of any injury, despite the dried blood that discolored the flesh around her eyes and nose. Brother Lucin was the oldest member of the Seventh Order she had met so far, stick-thin and almost totally bald, save for a tuft of white hair that sprouted from the top of his head like a forgotten weed. He wandered around the woman's body for a time, frowning in concentration, occasionally muttering to himself. During her fruitless search for evidence, Lerna had interviewed a number of people arrested on suspicion of dark practices, finding them all charlatans or victims of malicious accusation. One, a charming but terrified young man, had been all too happy to explain how he would gull rich widows into parting with coin or jewels by claiming to commune with long-dead relatives, providing a demonstration not entirely dissimilar to that now performed by Brother Lucin. In recognition of his honesty, Lerna had persuaded her father to commute the charlatan's sentence to 10 years in the Realm Guard. "How long will this take?" she asked Aspect Canis, failing to keep the dubious note from her voice. All places have history, Highness, he replied. Brother Lucan is obliged to sort through a haze of images to find the right event. Ack! The elderly brother exclaimed, his face drawn in a grimace of equal parts disgust and fear. Brother, Canis said, stepping closer. Brother Lucan waved him away with an irritated flap of his bony arms. I felt it, he said, casting an accusatory glare at Lerna, as if she had led him into some kind of trap. The thing inside her. Are you trying to kill me? Watch your mouth, brother, Iltis growled, his face dark with warning. Brother Lucan barely glanced at him. The past is real, he said to Lerna. Not some mishmash of shadows. It has power. My apologies if I have placed you in danger, brother, Lerna replied, realizing an insistence of propriety would avail her little with this one. But our current circumstance requires that we all take risks. She nodded at the corpse. Was that her? The brother looked down at the dead woman with palpable reluctance, edging away as if in expectation she might suddenly spring to life. There were soldiers with her. They called her Empress. She had a mighty gift. I could feel it, rushing out of her all at once to bend the wind to her will. Then she is dead, Count Marvin said. She gave up her life to destroy us. The enemy are leaderless now. Brother Lucan gave the battle lord a withering glance. This was just a shell, chosen for its gift. You can bet she'll already have woken in another. Why kill the slaves? Marvin asked. Witnesses, Lerna replied, looking again at the dead woman's face. Where did she find you? Did you ever have a name of your own? Few, if any, Valerians will know the true nature of their new empress. Have the bodies taken to the pyres? I doubt they have anything more to tell us. Pretense will avail us nothing now, she told the surviving captains of her army and fleet, gathered together on the high ground, beyond the beach where the troops still labored ashore, the sands dotted with blazing pyres for the dead. We have suffered a grievous blow. Lady Reva is missing, and most likely dead, as is Fleet Lord Alnestra. A full fifth of our army has been lost due to my misjudgment. Accordingly, I am bound to ask if there are any here no longer willing to follow my commands. She scanned their faces, finding most patently baffled by the question. The Maldinians regarded her with the same surety that had marked their attitude since the teeth, where, she knew, many believed their gods had invested her with some form of divine insight. Far from undermining their faith, the events of the previous evening seemed to have cemented it. Who but the gods could have snatched victory from such assured defeat? Similarly, Fieflord Arundel and Baron Banders exhibited no sign of distrust, as did Wisdom, who had come to speak for the small Airhill and Siorda contingent. The only clear expressions of unease came from Lord Marshal Norta, which was typical, and Lord Antesh, still evidently in the grip of his grief. But like the others, he remained silent. Very well, she said, nodding to Count Marvin. Battle Lord, our tactical position, if you would. We have a secure perimeter extending 1 mile inland, Highness. Brother Solis has the order scouting farther afield. So far, there are no reports of significant enemy forces nearby, although we have encountered a few cavalry patrols. We'll gain a clearer picture when the remaining horses are brought ashore. Those that are left, Baron Banders put in. A third of our mounts sickened and died on the ships. Horses don't take well to life at sea. This region is rich in farmland, Lerna said. No doubt we'll find replacements soon enough. Until then, I'm afraid any unhorsed knight will have to fight on foot, my lord. That'll give him something else to gripe about, Banders muttered, soft enough for Lerna to safely ignore. The Valerian fleet, she asked shiplord Elnurin. Still no sign, Highness. But I doubt they've gone far, probably licking their wounds and awaiting reinforcements. Then let's not allow them the leisure to do so. I hereby name you Fleet Lord Elnurin. The freighters and troopships will sail back to the realm with all dispatch to gather supplies and reinforcements. You will take every warship we have and harry the enemy without respite. I shall, Highness. It would assist our efforts if Lady Alornis were to accompany us. We require more fuel for her engines, and my fellows can't quite get the mix right. The Lady Artificer is indisposed. Make do as best you can. She paused, making a point of meeting the gaze of everyone present, ensuring they saw no uncertainty in her eyes. "The army must be fully mustered by tomorrow. When it is, we march for Volar. Their empress will no doubt be reveling in her imagined victory. I intend to disabuse her of this notion in short order." "Reva is dead, isn't she?" Alornis wouldn't meet her gaze, sitting listlessly on the bunk in Brother Kellen's tent. If the moans and occasional cries from the wounded troubled her, she gave no sign, her expression as unmoved as it had been during the battle. "Her ship was wrecked in the storm," Lerna told her. "We found some survivors, but none have any word of her. I know you were close to the Lady Governess, and I too grieve for her loss. Her spirit and her sword will be greatly missed. I always wanted to ask her about the siege, what she did, but I couldn't. I saw how it pained her. I used to wonder how a soul so kind could do what they say she did at Altor, for that was not the Reva I knew. Now—" She looked down at her hands, the thin, dexterous fingers moving like pale spiders. "Now I doubt she would know me." Lerna reached out to smooth a wayward lock of hair from Melornis's forehead, finding herself perturbed by the chill of her skin. "My lady, there are thousands of people now alive because of you. And thousands dead." Brother Kellen came to Alornis's side, holding out a cup of something hot and sweet-smelling. "A sleeping draught, my lady." "I don't want to sleep," she told him. "I might dream." "There will be no dreams." He smiled, placing the cup in her hands. "I promise." Lerna joined the healer as he moved away. Despite many hours' ceaseless work, he remained alert, seemingly indifferent to the foul stenches that clouded the tent, and the blood that stained his robe. "Can you help her?" she asked. "I can help her sleep, Highness. I can give her various remedies to calm her troubled mind. It may return her to some kind of normalcy for a time, but I've seen this before. The malady of the spirit that arises in those pushed beyond their limits. Once it takes hold, it never really fades. I advise she be returned to the realm as soon as possible." "No!" Alornis had risen from her bunk, advancing towards them, formerly placid features, now rigid with determined refusal. "No, I am staying here!" Her words were a little slurred and she stumbled, Lerna rushing forward to catch her. "We have more fires to light together, Highness," she whispered to Lerna as the Queen laid her on the bunk, watching as she slid into slumber, still murmuring, "So many beautiful fires." Chapter 5. Valin. The wolf people unveiled their canoes when the solid plain of white surrounding the island thinned, then fragmented under the weight of the new sun. Within days, all that remained were a few stubborn ice blocks drifting in the fast-flowing current separating the isles. Like the boats fashioned by the bear people at the Mirror Sound, the canoes of the wolf people were all constructed from hollowed-out tree trunks, varying widely in size. Most were capable of carrying no more than 4 people at once. Others were of sufficient size to accommodate up to 10. But there were 3 of such dimensions, it seemed incredible they could float at all. "Hewn from the great red trees that grow to the south," Asterak explained, as one of the huge craft was manhandled towards a slipway in preparation for launching. "Trees that grow tall as mountains over the lifespan of 20 men. Only once in a generation do the wolf people permit themselves to take a red tree. It's a cause for great celebration when a new big boat is made." The purpose of the huge craft soon became clear as Asterak led his wolves on board along with the other packs. There was a definite tension in each of the shaman as they stood amidst their wolves, faces set in concentration. The wolves all sat in placid obedience, though every once in a while one would turn towards a different pack, a low growl building in its throat before snapping back to instant placidity at an insistent gesture from its shaman. Without the shaman's command, they'd become wolves again, Valin realized, once again wondering at the fortitude of the gifted found among these people. They use their gifts for hours, yet never tire. "It's not strength," Kirill said, appearing at his side with her cat in tow. In accordance with Lonak custom, she hadn't named the beast. though the other gifted had predictably dubbed it One Ear. It was the least well-behaved of the cats, prone to voicing a nightly chorus of forlorn wails and a hissing disinclination towards any human company save Kirol's. It greeted Valin now with a brief snarl, and kept close to Kirol's side with a low-backed wariness. "Its skill," the huntress went on, nodding at Asterek, "born of centuries-old necessity. Our gifts are useful, but we can still survive without them. These people need their power, or the ice will kill them. So they learn to control it, share it, use only as much as they need." She smiled faintly, eyes still lingering on the Valerian. "We must seem like clumsy children to them." Valin and the Gifted were given places on one of the huge boats, whilst Orvin's guardsmen and the Centaur were obliged to crowd into the smaller craft, some newly constructed to accommodate the increased number taking part in this yearly migration. Scar trembled a little as he was led onto the canoe, pacified only slightly by a handful of berries. The warhorse had grown partly accustomed to the presence of the wolves, but the proximity of so many in a confined space was clearly trying his patience. "Calm now, old fellow," Valin said, trying to soothe him with a scratch to the nose. Today, however, Scar was in little mood for reassurance, eyes wide and fixed on the silent mass of wolves as he tossed his head, teeth bared in alarm. "Let me try," Dorena said, moving closer to press a hand to the warhorse's neck. She closed her eyes, a small line appearing in her forehead as she concentrated. Scar calmed almost immediately, his head lowering, eyes blinking in placid contentment. "I showed him the stables back home," Dorena said. "He thinks he's there now." "Your skills grow, my lady," Valin said, inclining his head. "A little." She turned to the nearest shaman, a lean-faced veteran, standing with five wolves arranged in an unmoving circle. "Though I doubt any of us will ever match them. Some skills require a lifetime's teaching." All hands save the shaman were expected to take a turn at rowing, 2 hours or more spent ploughing at the water with a broad-headed oar. As ever, the constant exertion gave Lorcan much to complain about, though Valin noted he displayed little actual strain when rowing. He seemed to be taller now, his back straighter and shoulders broader. For all his grumbling, Valin knew the boy he had met in the reaches had been lost somewhere in the tide of war and the privations of the ice. Though from his constant glances at Kara, it seemed one thing hadn't faded during the journey. The surrounding islands grew larger and taller the farther south they went, great mounds of snow-topped granite and thick forest from which more canoes would emerge as they neared. There was little celebration in the greetings exchanged between the wolf people, some waves or nods of respect between shaman, a few calls from old friends, but for the most part, they formed their ever-growing convoy with quiet efficiency. Valin also found it strange none seemed particularly surprised or perturbed by the presence of so many outsiders, most just eyeing his motley company with grim acceptance. "They knew we would be travelling with you," he said to Asterek during his twice-daily rowing shift. The shaman spoke little on the water, his face set in a mask of constant concentration, as he worked to keep his wolves in check. "Hawks can do more than kill," he replied, jerking his head at the sky, where a great swirling flock of spear-hawks kept track of the convoy. At night, they would descend to the forest of perches that sprouted from the canoes, gobbling down the slivers of meat provided by their shaman, most of whom seemed to be women. "They carry messages?" Valin asked. "But your people have no writing." "No, we have no books." Asterek pulled something from a pocket in his furs and tossed it to Valin, a length of elk bone etched from end to end in straight cuts along a single line. "Each mark represents a sound," Asterek explained. "Put them together and you have a word." "What does it say?" "Longknife is shaman of 30 wolves. Many Wings carved it when I reached manhood, and sent copies to all the settlements. It is the only time I've seen any of my people indulge in boasting." Valin glanced around at the other packs on the canoe, noting how small they were in comparison, none numbering more than a dozen. "It must be a trial to command so many." "Command is not really the right word. They accept me." Valin looked closer at Asterek's pack, seeing how their gaze was uniformly fixed on him, enthralled and barely blinking. "They can hear it," he realized. "The echo of the wolf's call. It's still in you." Asterix's expression flickered in momentary discomfort, one of the wolves turning towards Valen with a snarl burgeoning on its lips. It calmed as Asterix reached down to play a hand along its head, gazing up at him in wide-mouthed adoration. "They can hear it in you, also, Raven's Shadow. Some things never fade from a man's soul." They rode south for 3 days, gathering ever more wolf people on the way. By the time the broad coast of the mainland came into view, Valen estimated their total number at well over 100,000. More were waiting on the shoreline, where settlements could be seen amidst the trees, the dwellings larger and covering more ground than those on Wolfholm. "Why not live here all the time?" Kara asked Asterix as they neared the shore. "It seems a more comfortable place." "The elk roam south in the winter," he replied. "Too far for us to follow, leaving a frozen wilderness in their wake. But in the isles, walrus and whales appear when the ice forms." The evening saw a celebratory feast, where the last of the winter stocks were consumed. The wolf people clustered around several huge fires to roast their meat on skewers and share horns of pine ale, clicking away in their indecipherable tongue as they exchanged tales of winter hardship. Despite the generally convivial air, Valen knew this to be a muted affair, noting the many faces regarding him with tense expectation. As they had no word for lie, these people also had no word for secret. They had been making pilgrimage to the Painted Cave for centuries, and knew his face, and his name. He sat with Durenna away from the main throng, building a smaller fire so they could share a supper of walrus stew. He did the cooking, slicing the meat into strips and seasoning it with herbs, and the last of the salt he had carried from the realm. "I knew brothers who would rather abandon their sword than their salt," he told her, with only slight exaggeration. Life in the Order made most brothers skilled in the art of campfire cookery, and appreciative of the precious comfort offered by a small amount of seasoning. "Do you ever miss it?" she asked, accepting a bowl of stew. "You were raised to a life in the Order. It must have been hard to leave it behind." "I had already lost my brothers by the war's end, along with much else. There was nothing to return to." He settled beside her, and they ate in silence for a time. As ever, the sensation of shared understanding banished his worries with comforting ease. When he was with her, it was almost as if his song had returned, her moods being so easily read. He could see it now, the faint tension in her face as she ate, the way her eyes strayed constantly to his face. "You worry for the future," he said. "The world is in chaos," she replied. "Worry seems appropriate." "Were I still a man of the faith, I might quote a pertinent catechism about the virtues of hope. You believe the Queen's invasion will succeed?"
"I believe in her. She is more than she was."
"And if we do succeed, what then?"
"We return to the Reaches, where I suspect we'll spend much of our time protecting them from gold-hungry idiots."
"That is your ambition? Just the Tower and the Reaches?"
"The Tower, the Reaches."
He reached out to take her hand,